welcome, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Henrik here. Good to be back with you again. I still have some issues to sort out with some of the computers that we use for our video productions and live show recordings and stuff like that. So we're going to be doing some audio-only shows here as we get started and ease back into doing regular shows again. But we'll be up and running as normal here before you know it. Today we have Justin Garcia from the Pressure Project with us on the show. We are going to get his perspective on some of the recent events from the NFL debacle to what happened in Charlottesville. And remember, folks, you know, we haven't really been able to cover that as much as we wanted. So it might be, not outdated, but we're somewhat behind the curve of basically, you know, providing some further analysis of the situation. But I think it's still definitely worth talking about because Justin has some really interesting and good points on the issue. But before we get started, I just want to express a special thanks to all of you guys who have sustained your membership and can help keep us running on a somewhat semi-normal level until the new members website is up and ready here within, 2 weeks or so, give or take. So thank you so much, guys. We can't thank you enough for staying with us and having the patience that you have with us. Thank you. I also want to extend a special thanks to everyone of you that have donated to us in the last few days and the last few weeks. You've made sure that we can pay our bills, pay our employees, and not having to dismantle on the growth and progress that we've made with Red Eyes, because as you might know by now, we do not have the ability to get new signups and new members aboard because our members' website is down due to the hack and the data breach that we were subjected to. So, you know, we welcome any help that we can get, whether you can sustain your membership and or if you want to help us by donating. We appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much. We're blessed with incredible supporters and listeners slash viewers that have helped us in the way that you have throughout this. So you guys are awesome. Thank you so much. But all right, let's bring on our guests. Hey, Justin, welcome back. It's great to speak with you again. Hope all is well with you and yours and that life is good on your end.
I appreciate it. Great to be back, brother.
Awesome, awesome. I want to get you back on the show to talk a bit about what's been going on lately, what you've been up to. I mean, there's just a crazy amount of things happening in the world that I kind of want to just run through with you a bit later and kind of get your, you know, measure the temperature on the culture war and the degradation of everything from masculinity to just the West in general. But as you guys still going strong over, of course, at the Pressure Project, what else is new, Justin? What have you been up to lately?
Well, the Pressure Project's still going strong. We have a weekly show that we do live on Facebook, and we release it on iTunes. And I have my Warrior Project, which is my membership site, and a couple other things. We're, you know, working in the background also. So I stay busy, brother. You know that.
No, of course. Yeah, definitely. I was checking out some of the latest episodes. You guys are going strong over there. A lot of topics, of course, lined up. I know that you talked about Charlottesville and some of these things. I want to ask you about that later, but I actually wanted to begin to discuss the NFL debacle, you know, and maybe actually zoom out and look at the bigger picture a little bit, just talking about sports in general. I mean, obviously, I know that you're into martial arts, you know, that's a sport, you like to train, work with your body, but just from this kind of spectator's point of view, I find it fascinating with kind of some of the fanaticism that is surrounding some people's dedication to, you know, the teams kind of on the sidelines, and it kind of sad to a certain extent. It might, though, and I think you recognize this, might be a reflection of a desire to have kind of a tribe, frankly. I get that. But, you know, now after the way that these prima donnas in the NFL have turned on, on America, on the audience, on the people that have been paying their multi-million dollar salaries and everything else, what do you think about all of this when you see it, Justin?
Well, I think that when you look at what's going on in the NFL, you know, the thing about marketing is that it works, right? You know, I got to market my stuff, you market your stuff, and the NFL has billions of dollars with which it can market itself. And over the years, it's created a connection with people whereby they think that they are actually part of a tribe that matters. And they are consumers, and a lot of them, you know, they would not want to condemn somebody for, you know, disrespecting the flag or the country's name in any way. But, you know, God forbid somebody said something bad about their team or criticized their quarterback. So a lot of it is really conflating and confusing what is significant and what matters and what is not. You know, my whole big point of contention with a lot of the professional athletes that are, you know, protesting during these games and pre-games and during the anthem and such is not this sort of, you know, this sort of dramatic, heartfelt, you know, concern about, you know, does everybody love America still or anything of that nature.
Right.
It's really, you know, I look at it as a commentary on how pathetic we've become as a society that you could have a football player kneel before a sport game and everybody have this emotional reaction. You know, I talk about magic words, right, in society, you know, the N word, right? The K word for our Jewish friends, you know, like all these words that like magical incantations, you say them aloud and people's bodies start to change. And we're the people that give these things this power. And there is not the only thing that's worse than people, than the athletes choosing to protest, you know, these multi-million dollar catchers of balls, choosing to protest during this national anthem. The only thing worse than that is the emotional effect that it has to the point where it is argued that their protesting is actually working. Just like those magical words, you know, that we could use and affect people, you know, and it's just a snapshot of how far we've removed ourselves from functional, you know, tribal identity and from just keeping our eyes on the things that actually matter, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is a kind of a surrogate to something real, I think. That's what people are tied to, the team, and they want it to be theirs and stuff like that. But it's just, you know, the dynamic between these two forces, and I agree with that. I'm completely on the outside of all of this. I don't have it need for people to be like, you know, America, got to think of America first, you know, kind of thing. But it's like the players, again, are, you know, who are making millions of dollars on basically, well, America, let's face it, the free market system, everyone who's paying their tickets and stuff like that. And most of those people, they're going to be, you know, middle of the road Americans. They're going to be probably majority white as well. And they're sticking a finger to all of them and say, you know, I don't want your white supremacy, you know. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. It's like these are the people that are, you know, they've given you all of these things, and yet it's just not enough for them. And it's always some political thing. That's the problem too, right? That these, it's probably the owners of the teams, to be honest, that are concocting some of this. But it's like it always turned into some political damn thing, and that's what I'm tired of as well.
No, I agree, and I made a video the other day about this specific topic, and one of the things that I had brought up was that the NFL became as popular as it is because, you know, like in some cases, religion or art or, you know, literature, it's an escape. It's an escape for a lot of people, and that escape has allowed it to become so formidable in terms of its significance in, you know, popular culture. And To have these professional athletes pretty much bite the hand that feeds them and choose to infuse their own political, you know, identity into an identity that has nothing to do with politics. You know, they're meant to put on their uniforms and run up and down a field and catch and throw balls. That's why they get paid. That's why everybody likes to see them. People want to put them on a pedestal because they are phenomenal physical specimens, not because they have opinions that are worth hearing concerning politics.
Yep.
And it's just this conflation. And, you know, it's again, another underlying, you know, epidemic in our society. You know, if it's not the athletes, it's the actors or the singers. And, you know, I saw, you know, you have people like Jennifer Lawrence and Miley Cyrus being quoted about politics. It's like, exactly how ridiculous are we going to allow this all to become, you know?
It's going to get much worse, believe me, you know. But it's, I think it was, wasn't it Kaepernick, whatever his name is, that kind of started this?
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, too, because I believe, well, he's half white. He was raised by a very white family, but he's identified as black. That seemed to hate, you know, white America and America overall. They kind of triggered all of this. And of course, you can never get away from this issue that everything is didactic, and somehow, again, he, I don't know if someone pulling his strings or if this is him completely, you know, running on his own, but it's probably a deal of him living completely in the environment of the media, right? They have constructed this image of who he needs to be a good person, right? And who he needs to fight. And it just turns into this very annoying thing where these millionaires, again, I just go back to that point, millionaires that have been given all of this by the very system that they're protesting and hating. I just, maybe they're just low IQ. They just don't get this stuff.
Well, you know, it's virtue signaling. And the thing about virtue signaling, you know, very similar to it. And I bring up this point when I talk about like welfare moms, you know, these moms that will have kids just to get more money at the end of the month. And I've known too many of them to even waste time debating whether they exist, you know, and people ask, well, how can they do this? You know, where's their morality? Where's their integrity, their pride? Well, the thing is, if you go long enough generationally without reinstalling those things and the merits of those virtues, people lose them. So similar to the welfare mom who, you know, why does she do it? Because it works. In this society, it works to act that way. Well, virtue signaling, we're now moving to the point where because we're appeasing these people that do this, because we're sort of conceding, you know, left and right, you know, things to sort of just avoid conflict, what is happening is now virtue signaling has begun to evolve, and it's begun to permeate every aspect of our society to the point where you could have a multi-million dollar athlete take a knee during a national anthem, and it escalates to the point where the president is tweeting about it. You know, this is like, yeah. This is a bad B movie that we're living right now,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. It's so insignificant. But, you know, what should be done in an ideal situation here, at least as far as I'm concerned, the people who pay these salaries, the people who ultimately sit and stare at this bullshit for hours on end, basically being the product that the advertisers are looking for, they should walk away from it. I mean, this is truly the bread and circuses. This is the modern-day Colosseum, if you will, of our times.
Right.
And people should walk away from it, and they should do something which is productive and real and authentic in their lives instead of this kind of simulacrum of believing that they belong to something which, as you point out rightly, is just basically at this point a corporate, you know, market structure, basically.
Right. You know, I'm reminded of Nietzsche's dynamic that he designed between the master and the slave moralities, and how the slave, you know, as a component of his identity, includes and is influenced by the identity of others. And the master pretty much is following his own identity and is following, looking to design, you know, his own destiny, as it were. Well, today in society, you have people who are very comfortable living in the Matrix, you know. And for those of people who have seen that movie, you know, there was one Judas, one traitor amongst the people on the ship. And the thing that he was going to be repaid by the computers, by the machines, for betraying his brothers was being allowed back into the Matrix. And I think there are people who have that as a component of their character. And they are just, it's a combination of not having the intestinal fortitude to deal with the conflict necessary to be your own man, and also being so far removed from any virtue of worth that they don't even understand the inherent value of following these types of you know, masculine, courageous, virtuous type behaviors. You know, so being your own man, doing what you're going to do, taking care of you and yours, getting up every day and going out to work, like these things are almost at this point from a bygone era, because the aquarium that we all live in has changed reality to the point where it is now a matter of owning the aquarium rather than understanding that we are in an artificial reality.
Interesting. Well, and you know, I definitely want to zoom out on that a little bit later, because that's where the big picture is at. That's where the interesting stuff is. But if we, for a moment, continue kind of in the fish pond or in the aquarium for a little bit, what do you think is this obsession with the establishment, with the system overall right now, with with white supremacy, right? I mean, this is largely an image in the media, if you ask me, that has been constructed. It's basically the current day boogeyman. I mean, in the wake of the NFL thing, we saw these hashtags popping up, say, you know, take a knee and a number of other ones, which was, I saw them in combination with like fight. It's a combination of fighting Trump and then white supremacy at the same time and trying to basically deconstruct, I guess, American white identity. But what do you see? Why are they so obsessed with this?
Well, I think it's by design. You know, I think I'll take, for example, you know, I run martial arts schools here in New York City. And when we want to introduce a program or we want to make some sort of significant change, we start to install in the meme, in the culture of the school, an environment. We start to construct an environment that when we eventually unpack or unveil whatever this new program or announcement is, it's well-received. It's in line with the momentum of a cultural shift that we've generated. And I think we see that. And people, I really don't think understand that there are people in media centers, you know, there are people in political centers or spaces where that they are making decisions to pursue certain angles, to pursue certain perspectives, to infuse these cultural memes into the dialogue that we're having concerning, you know, politics. And it's all now what it basically comes down to what they think will work in on the mission of allowing them to eventually win. So if you're talking about the left, obviously reclaiming the presidency, reestablishing the narrative, getting sort of all the monkeys out of the machines that are running around right now, like the Trumps, like, you know, they got Bannon out. They, you know, they're making these changes,
yep,
to sort of take the power away from these people that are influencing the general public against the narrative that they want to control.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. You know, I wanted to ask you about that too. In terms of, I mean, Trump is very difficult to read, and the longer it goes, the more kind of, to a certain extent, kind of confused I am, to be honest. But it seems to at least that there was a kind of a core group around Trump, which were kind of, I guess, letting him stay on track to for the lack of a better term. You know, Michael Flynn was outed, as you say, Steve Bannon was outed. There's others that have kind of fallen off. And at this point, it's almost like there is Trump at the top of the system to a certain extent, at least the visible one that we, you know, within the official world, they have, you know, we have him there, but then directly underneath him, the whole managerial class, they're basically against him, and they're trying to, you know, topple him. And I think also that's one of the reasons why we've seen this focus on white supremacy. They have tried everything they can to attach, you know, him to, you know, for example, the alt-right and to what happened in Charlottesville and all these things, to the best of their ability to try to get him out of this position, basically. And they have latched on to the alt-right, to the KKK and everything else, to try to basically destroy his reputation. Do you think it has worked so far? Are they actually pulling this off?
Well, I think first I'll say generally, you know, in this country, if not the world, but in this country specifically, we have dug a ditch that is so deep, we can no longer step out of this ditch. We have to climb out of it. And it is going to be a process that is not a matter of, everybody, let's just change our minds really quickly, and tomorrow everybody will be squared away. You know, it's going to be a fight tooth and nail. So I think in a more general sense, you know, we have to look at this as, this was never going to be a one and done, all right, the guy got in there and fixed everything and everything's good. Imagine, I would counter a lot of the people who are sort of being negative or pessimistic at this point and say, well, imagine if Hillary was elected. Imagine if Bernie was elected. So to keep things in perspective, like, holy shit, we're in a good spot, all things being considered. You know, but now more direct to what Trump's going through, of course they're going to try and create a wedge and division anywhere they can. The one thing that I absolutely love about Donald Trump, about President Donald Trump, is that he does not give a fuck. And sometimes, you know, it's gonna rub you the wrong way, because he's going to handle things with a shotgun that probably could have used a scalpel. But we also know that if there's anybody that could put up enough resistance to at least start the climb out of this ditch. It's that type of mindset in him. You know, so I think Bannon is probably one of the greatest Americans ever. I've been following him and his information for a long time. The guy is as straight and narrow as they come, and he loves America. And I think it got to the point where him being in the White House was really restricting him. And that's why the move was made for him to be out of it, whether it was his doing or a combination of a bunch of people's doings. But you see right now, he was, I think it was yesterday or the day before, he was on stage at a rally for the runoff election, I think in Alabama.
Yeah.
And he's campaigning for the person who's opposite of who Trump's campaigning for. You know, Trump's campaigning for Strange, and he's for Moore. But one of the things that I found telling was that he was saying about Moore, the person he was supporting, Bannon, this is, you know, he said, you know, a vote for Moore is a vote for Donald Trump. You know, so he's letting people know, like, listen, Donald Trump's dealing with some shit, but everything that we voted him into office for, this guy stands for.
Mm-hmm.
He also says, you know, somebody I think had asked him about the knee taking, and he goes, I think every American every night should take a knee, and thank God that Donald Trump is our president. So he's still very much on board with the plan. He's just had to create new teams to play on at the moment, you know?
It's a very interesting political kind of game going on, both in front of the cameras to a certain extent, but also obviously more so behind the cameras, and the maneuvering of different people in place. And you know, I think things could have probably been, as you say, obviously much, much worse at this situation, but they also could have been potentially much better if, you know, the right people were in place, if obviously the system overall would go along with Trump and just not fight with him. But at the end of the day, Justin, I mean, it proves and shows that, you know, the president of the United States doesn't hold all the power. He can't do exactly what he wants to do, although it seemed like that under Obama, to be honest, with all the executive orders and stuff. But when it comes to Trump, all these random judges can just step in and, like, stop him. You know, so you have to redo things like the travel ban and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's this whole game that's going on. But do you think that he'll be able to be in a position where he is influential and can really change the direction of America and the country, or is his power at this point just going to kind of diminish as other forces and other people seem to be gaining more and more control?
You know, I think that if he does not succeed, right, if he does not succeed in moving us closer to where we would all collectively agree is the goal, you know, more freedom, more liberty, you know, less of a Marxist, you know, identity and presence, you know, in the country. If he does fail, I think it would be a matter of him being too much too soon, and not being able to navigate the game, you know, the very, you know, Machiavellian, you know, game that's being played behind the scenes. He is a power player. He's used to dealing in the world of business. The rules are different. And the networks aren't already established. You know, in business, you'll have, you know, companies and individuals that will form these alliances that can become very formidable. But in politics, you have those same alliances that have been established over generations. And it's a much tighter network of people. And a lot of people, you know, we're given the dichotomy, I would say the false dichotomy of left versus right. But it's really, you know, us versus them. And they're going to fight tooth and nail to maintain the power and influence that they have. Because it's not something that powerful people, you don't get to where those people are by not doing anything necessary to become more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So giving it away is something that I think some people are maybe a little bit on the naive side, you know, concerning. Like, these guys are not just going to sort of let go of the power that they have.
No, definitely not. And even on a smaller scale, well, I mean, okay, this is high level game to it as well. But the left overall is obviously ramping up. Those with openly communist allegiances, the way that they have stepped up, you know, in America to go after people who think differently from them, that's very unique as well, as we saw during the whole campaign in 2016, right? It's almost on par with what happened in the Weimar Republic, for Christ's sake. These highly polarized political groups, and I'm thinking, of course, of Antifa and these other lefty groups and stuff like that. They've really become hyper violent, and we have not really seen it on a level like that. And same thing there, I think, Justin. They're not going to lay down and give up either. They're ramping up the game because they think the world is just going to complete shit. You know, while right. We think, oh, let's give Trump a chance. Maybe he can improve things. So this is not by any means dying down. This is just beginning to heat up and ramp up. What do you think their response is going to be to a Trump presidency? What are they going to try to get out of this situation and turn? What direction are they going to turn things towards?
Well, you know, very similar to children, you have these people who basically are trying to push every button and find out where their boundaries are. And they're going to throw tantrums. They're going to be emotional. They're going to sort of operate under this premise that no matter what we do, you know, I'm not like these people think they're not going to get shot. They think they can't be killed. They think, you know, that they it's always hilarious to me that they argue, you know, that the freedom of speech to take somebody else's freedom of speech away, you know, and getting physical in an area where discourse has gotten them to where they are or even allowed to exist, you know, nowadays. But when I look at these rallies in specific, you know, I see a lot of people who on both sides of the fence are not accomplishing anything other than giving the narrative fodder to, you know, the media, to politicians on the left. So the whole thing is, if you're having a rally, it's all about creating awareness, putting information out, basically trying to represent your position politically. But that's all based on the assumption that your information is going to be transferred, sort of congruently with the way that you put it out. And we have already conceded that the media is under control of the left. We've already conceded that the left politicos are going to look to sort of cut off, you know, any communication from the right where they can. So we've conceded that the message is going to be, you know, sabotaged, you know, already. Yet people are continuing to try to win this battle. And every single time somebody hits an Antifa back, they're the one that are caught on camera. Every single time somebody, you know, curses, they're the one on camera. Like, never mind the people that are walking around American streets with hammer and sickle shirts and Che shirts and are just mobbing together with masks on, you know, doing violence.
Amazing.
You know, like, this is utterly ridiculous, but this is where we are. And what I would say is, like, we could debate how do we fix this, but I just want everybody, at least on the right, to acknowledge that whatever we're doing, it's not working concerning these Antifa, you know? We need to change it. What that change is, sure, we could have a conversation about that. I'm all for stopping these rallies and holding more intellectual events, speaker events, forcing, you know, police and people who we've actually hired and in some cases elected into positions where they're supposed to protect us, holding their feet to the fire and holding them accountable for what they're going to be doing. Because, you know, I know if I'm somewhere speaking and I'm assaulted by Antifa, and I have to actually do something back to them, I know that there's a cop somewhere that isn't doing his fucking job. And
right.
I think that's the battle, you know?
Yeah.
So putting myself in position, you know, like, I'm not a fan of these guys showing up to rallies, you know, even on the right, and a bunch of them are friends of mine, you know, where they're showing up with helmets on and shields and bats. Like, what are we doing? Well, what exactly are we doing? You know, this is not 1776. You are not shooting a rifle with gunpowder in your mouth through bushes somewhere in the fucking wilderness. Like, what are you doing? This is LARPing revolutions. You know, it's ridiculous, you know?
Okay, so obviously we're talking about Charlottesville here. I want to get into the debacle that was Charlottesville. And when I say debacle, I mean that from basically every angle, to be honest. It was a debacle from the point of view of the police behavior and actions, to the city officials who cut the permit, to the organizers of the Unite the Right rally, to those people in prominent positions that in my opinion didn't do enough in post afterwards to kind of explain the situation and stuff like that. to the media's treatment, of course, of the whole situation, and to most people's inability, myself included, that we who were there, who were not cunning enough to realize that the incestuous elites would be pulling a stunt of some kind during an event like this to turn the whole situation around so that they could use it to their own advantage. What I'm saying is that we should have been more paranoid, and I'm including the organizers of the event in this, unless something else is going on, which I'm not, you know, privy to. But there's, my point is, Justin, there's plenty of both blame and shame to go around on all of this. But what was your impressions, and what do you think? Because I get you when you're talking about LARPing and all this kind of stuff. This is like probably fun, to be honest, to a certain extent, to the people that were there attending. I know that it was life and death. It was one person died of a heart attack. The media says, you know, she was driven over by car, of course, but it is turning into life and death, despite the fact that people are, as you say, show up with LARPing, you know, almost wooden swords and shields here, you know, homemade kind of stuff. But it is for real. It's turning into that.
Right. I think that, you know, when looking at what was attempted to be accomplished, number one, there was not a clear mission. You know, I think people had a somewhat compatible, you know, mission. The different people that were represented, you know, on the right at that event. I think ultimately, though, the ends is what matters. Did you accomplish what you were setting out to do? And whether you were right or not, like obviously now, you know, trying to recontrol the narrative as much they can to the best of their ability, it's like, yeah, you want to talk about the fat smoker girl having a heart attack. You want to talk about, you know, police standing down and allowing Antifa to come into contact with the people who are attending the rally. Like, yeah, you have to talk about that now. My whole thing was every single one of these things, maybe not the fat girl having a heart attack, but every single one of these things was completely predictable to the point where it should be expected. And I see no contingencies for these things that were completely inevitable, meaning it's just poor planning. You know, like, there are plenty of people who have lost wars who were in the moral right. You know, that is absolute. Are you trying to be right or are you trying to win? If you think you're right, okay, but you still have to form a plan that allows you to win. And Charlottesville was a testament to just how ill-prepared so many of these organizers and people on the right who are trying to be thought leaders, some of them, I'll tell you right now, are just trying to get more likes on social media, more downloads for their podcasts, more T-shirts sold, you know, through Teespring. You know, you have all these people who are completely just ill-equipped to handle the responsibility of trying to pull one of those events off, you know. And Charlottesville is a complete testament to that.
Yeah, well, I think people should ask themselves, what is the end result? And again, as you say, I think that's how we have to look at it. Assuming that people want to really have an impact in the world and, let's say, change people's minds or I don't know, bring attention to certain types of issues right now. I mean, in this case, it was obviously the way that I perceived this to be, and maybe someone out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was about bringing attention to the fact that the whole establishment is basically attacking the history of the United States of America, who it was built by, and the fact that there's a reality that all these, you know, Southern Confederacy people, you know, they have a history in the South, and they basically just want to remove these statues, erase that whole history, put a lid on it, and forget that it ever happened. Eventually, as we know, they'll go after the other side in the Civil War too. They'll go after probably, you know, who knows, Lincoln next, and Andrew Jackson, and all these people, right? But
right,
that issue is a very important issue. It's a tremendously important issue because this is how the cultural Marxists are, like, reshaping history. They're reshaping society, the world, people's perception of it. If that was the intention by organizers, then this was a radical failure, you know, on par that is just, I don't know what words to use in this case. If it was on the other side, an event that was designed to get a lot of, you know, groups together to try to make them seem that they were all on the same page or something, or all represented the same, you know, issues or something, or all thought the same, or all were in the same boat on every single issue, then, yeah, it was probably a success, because that's what the media managed to do at the end of the day, right? At the end of the day, there was a few, you know, pointy hat clowns that showed up from the KKK. Whether they were invited or not, I don't know. And if they were invited, you know, who approved that? But you had some plants, probably, or who knows, maybe they were genuine, but they were showing up with their swastika flags and everything, and the media got all the shots that they wanted, they got their photographs, and they basically got that perfect opportunity to say that anyone who attended the rally and thinks like those people do, they are on board with the phonies who are like the federal agents that have been running the KKK since, you know, 20 years ago, basically.
Right.
It's a disaster, you know?
You know, I think if, and I agree, you know, trying to control the heritage and history of a people is how you control how they see themselves. We've seen it throughout history, more recently, and a lot of people have drawn the comparison, although obviously for some reason the media never picked up on it, but it's exactly what ISIS does, right? What do? They go and they burn all the idols, they destroy all the art, all the statues, anything that represents an identity that is not congruent with their own. And when you look at, like, the Charlottesville event, you know, if you're hosting this event in this park to commemorate and support this statue, you know, you don't call it Unite the Right, right? Call it, you know, Save the Statue. You know,
yes.
You call it, you know, like, there is a way to handle this.
I wondered about the name, by the way. I got to get Jason Kessler back, to be honest. I believe he was the main organizer of the whole thing. But exactly, because you're hitting that right on point. What was the purpose with a name like that, considering the groups that showed up at the end of the day? Right.
Like, if you want to pull this off, and I'm going to give some advice out there to future would-be organizers. Number one, you know, protest in general, and these types of rallies in general, were most powerful prior to the internet, prior to the way that we're able to control and create information today. Now, being that that's the case, being that we do have these rallies that are going on now, and there is the media still out there, the information that you're relying on the media to convey is information that you're basically flushing down the toilet. So prior to this event, there should be there should be press releases, there should be sponsored campaigns on different social media platforms talking about this is what this represents, condemning or, you know, disavowing any other person or identity that you know is going to show up and the media is going to try and focus on. All of this needs to be documented and out there prior to having this event go off. Everything in terms of the name of the event, the narrative, the information, the marketing, the merchandising, whatever, needs to be congruent. You can't have something to defend Southern heritage and this statue and call it Unite the Right and have a tiki torch march the night before. Like, what the fuck is going on here? This is like an episode of fucking Star Wars. Like, we're going from one thing to another thing. Like, how many different things are going on at once? What happens is, within the hysteria and the confusion, the media gets to sort of pluck and construct a narrative. And that is what the organizers of that event allowed to happen. You know, and I see it happen time and time again. You got to get ahead of the information, and you got to monopolize the narrative as much as you can. And that needs to happen prior to any of one of these organized events.
Yeah, the media directed it. They decided effectively what images to release, how to shape it. And as you say, it all hinges on the name at that point, to be honest, because then it's like indicative, as we say, that anyone who attended that, they were there to unite with each other they were uniting under the disgust of trying to change history or the attack on these statues and the removal of heritage. Sure, that's fine. But as you say, at the end of the day, it was something that was controlled by the enemy. It was controlled by the media, and we to a certain extent allowed that to happen. Frankly, I, you know, who was there. I was going to live stream the speeches. I had no idea that all these other groups were going to be there. There was no right. information about this. There was nothing where, you know, did they call in and say, hey, you know, we're going to attend. Can we show up or what? Because otherwise, there should be, as you say, an awareness over the fact that, you know, those who will seek to derail it, they will send in their people to try to dominate. And that's what happened, dominate the narrative and dominate, you know, the imagery from this, basically. And it was basically, we hand them on a plate exactly what they wanted. And right. all the groundwork that had been done by the alternative right up to that point was, in my view, pretty much shattered with the event. And I'm just talking about the perceptions in the public mind of what this is. Again, as you said before, we can debate the intricacies and the falsehood by the media, but at the end of the day, it is, you know, what goes on Wikipedia and what goes into the history books of what this was, that's the official history, if you know what I mean, Justin. I mean, it doesn't matter. Right. I mean, you can have right. people for 2 decades talking or over a decade talking about the fraud of 9/11. But at the end of the day, still in the history books, still, if you go and look at official history, it's what the authorities dedicate, you know, what the narrative was that they wrote. And the same thing goes here in Charlottesville. So, you know, if the objective was to change people's minds, get them to, you know, highlight the issues that we are concerned with, many of people that attended that meeting, then I think it was an utter disaster and a failure.
Yeah, I think, and I'm reminded to a talk I had a few weeks ago about this with somebody. I was talking about my martial arts academy, and I was talking about different protocols that we have and how we handle the students here. Now, we all know from, you know, other information that we've dealt with and narratives that, you know, having a rape accusation can ruin a person's life. Whether or not it was true, it happened, whether or not he was exonerated, whether or not the accuser admits that it was fraudulent at a later date. Summarily, the person's reputation is destroyed. And when you look at a lot of these events, what they're doing is they're allowing the accusation to occur time and time again. And then they're trying to sort of reconstruct and rehabilitate their reputation after the fact. But very similar to the type of, it's like, and then the comparison I have with my school is, all my instructors understand, if you are ever in a room by yourself with a child, you're fired, you know, immediately. And I know that I don't have any child molesters here. But the thing is, it's the accusation that ruins a man. And I am going to do preemptively everything necessary to be able to control the narrative from the beginning. And now these people with these events, you still have people that are countering the media's narrative by saying that, yeah, but we were right, but they're lying. But like, no shit, of course they're lying. You didn't know they were going to lie before you did this? You didn't know that you were going to be in this battle prior to allowing it to happen? You know, there are things in our control, things are not in our control. There are so many things within the control of these organizers that they're just not taking seriously and investing the time into sort of putting in the best possible position.
It's interesting, though, because, I mean, I think that the whole house of cards that was built here on the level of activism that we saw kind of in the wake of the Trump, you know, presidency and the political, you know, fringes, if you will, on the outside, who were very successful in many regards, you know, from the memes to the trolling and the Pepes and everything else. That whole house of cards kind of came crashing down to a certain extent with Charlottesville, and I'm talking in the mind of your general, you know, person out there now, right? Who potentially you could have reached and try to basically speak rationally to or offer them to look into something else, a little bit more information. What are these guys about? What do they want? What are their concerns about? And maybe at that point you could kind of, I don't know, unlock their minds, or you can offer them something. They could come over to our side and understand us a little bit better. At this point, that seems to be kind of maybe that opportunity is shot, right? That's been ruined to a certain extent. But it has to be recognized also that it has increased in intensity the attacks on anyone who holds those positions and think differently, right? From the censorship to the booting off of platforms to the just open, you know, firing of people and everything else. It was like a very coordinated attack in the wake of this. I don't know if that is completely, coordinated, or if it's kind of coincidental due to the media's portrayal or the media's kind of treatment of Charlottesville. But it's true, I think, though, Justin, that they have gone after people on this political side of things more than anything I've seen. I mean, in terms of the First Amendment, I mean, that's basically gone in this country, right?
Right. You know, and I think people need to understand that we still have things in our power. We have ways to leverage our voices that I do not think are being fully utilized. Like having, let's say, 1,000 people show up to a rally, right? And everybody's all fired up about a rally. I could hold a Facebook Live event and have thousands of people across the planet watching my event. I've seen people, you know, campaign, market, lead up to some sort of social media event that either happens online or is live streaming from an event, but it's all planned and marketed prior. Like, that is so much more organized. The control over the narrative is so tight that there is no third party that can come in and chop it up and sort of edit it the way they and present it the way they want to. But these people just aren't willing to evolve with these changing times. You know, there was an event in D.C. a few weeks ago. This the one that had the Black Lives Matter on the stage, and it was a right event. And I heard from a friend of mine that they had the guy Outlaw Morgan, who's a social media personality. He wasn't allowed to speak at the event because he didn't do the paperwork, I guess, necessary to, you know, whatever process they had by which the speakers, you know, would be allowed to be on stage. Well, you're fucking up when you don't allow somebody who has that much of a herd onto your stage to connect with the message, because you have to understand that having those types of people insulates you from those third-party media attacks that we see happen time and time again. It's so easy for, you know, I think of all these people over, you know, over the last few years on the right who've had their Facebook pages taken away, their Patreons taken down, their, you know, like we've had Teespring, PayPal reject their accounts and take away their ability to make money. There's so many things that people have to fight against. You know, for us to not fully utilize the things that are still in our control is just foolish. If we still think that turning the tide in this country is getting a couple of hundred people and showing up in a park and fighting with teenagers in fucking black ski masks and fucking hockey pads, like, I don't understand what the fuck these people are thinking nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clear to me that the event, don't know how early or how late in the progression of events, but it was hijacked at some point, right? It was, whether that was intelligence services or just full on, I don't know, police or something like that. But somewhere along the road here, it was taken over, steered in that direction. The media were there to kind of do their part, right? Take the photos, take all those, you know, control the narrative, right? And then people basically, and I agree with you here, Justin, they were basically not paranoid enough. And not ready enough to predict that this would be what they wanted to do, right? If that kind of realization would have been there, maybe there would have been more careful planning. Maybe it would have been put together in a different way. And again, I don't know if all of this was just coincidental or it was some grand, glorious scheme. I don't have access to that information at this stage, so I just don't know. So we're kind of speculating a bit here. But again, it's such a shame, you know, and if people would have just been more kind of cautious, suspicious, and frankly paranoid to a certain extent, I think we would have been better off at this stage.
Well, here's the thing. I want to make this one distinction in the verbiage. Paranoia is when preparation begins to escalate past the threshold of function and it becomes dysfunctional. So I'm paranoid if I won't leave my house because I think I'm going to get hit by a car. I'm paranoid if I don't want to go outside during the daytime because I think I'm going to die of skin cancer, right? So paranoia, we have to reserve for those times where people are acting in a way that is dysfunctional. What we're talking about right now is preparation. These people, it's not that they were paranoid enough. And I know it's a semantical thing, but it's one that sure. I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that they were paranoid. It's that they weren't prepared. Because when we say prepared, the onus is on them to be responsible for their actions. And they have to understand that assuming the identity and the role of, you know, organizer of one of these rallies in this case comes along with it, the responsibility of making sure that all preparations are done. And the people just were not prepared enough, you know?
Yeah. I don't know when he grew so large, the whole event overall, and I was certainly not alerted to this, and I'm not saying that somehow someone should have had the responsibility to report this to me or whatever, but I'm just saying that for, you know, the first event that took place in Charlottesville was, I thought it was a very good one. There was a few speakers that showed up, there were some supportive people, and that was it. And frankly, I thought it would be something similar. I did not expect it to be this massive event, which was just,
you know what it was? You know what it was? This was round two in a place where the governor, the local government, including the city council, the police department, and the citizens all had another chance to fuck up a rally. And now they had a little bit of lead time
right.
to put everything in place, and they pulled it off brilliantly.
Oh, man. All right. Well, there's a lot to say about that, of course. And I'm going to try to have Jason back and just try to straight out a few of these, just have some questions, because I'm curious, just for myself also, just to know, like, okay, what was I part of? What was I, because I want to try to, as you say, make sure that this doesn't happen again, right? I have to be in a position where I predicted these things, and for the sake of just feeling, you know, at ease with myself and just not be so fucking angry with myself for not thinking ahead in this regard and just seeing through this, I want to try to put some of those questions to rest. So we'll see if we can do that at some point. But kind of shifting gears a little bit, Justin, there's you know, a lot to be said about that. But we were talking about Trump. We're talking about, you know, his presidency. And again, just basically how they've tied all of these events to, you know, to him. And of course, this response afterwards, I thought was good by President Trump, because at least he recognized that there was another side in the equation here that were violent, they were leftists, and this is something that the media, again, I mean, they came down on him for like nothing I've seen, just for him recognizing that there was an oppositional force there who basically had equal blame when it came to the violence. And that was enough for them, for the media, to shit their damn pants and turn on Trump and basically turn him into a defenders of those on the right that were there, which he never was, of course. He never said anything like that.
No, you know, and it's happened with me over the last few weeks a lot with students of mine, with followers of my podcast and social media presence. A lot of them, you know, just not understanding, like, words matter. And to conflate things eventually leads you away from reality and truth. And the distinction that he made was that there was culpability on both sides of the battlefield. At no point, obviously, and I'm just basically restating what you just said, at no point did he say, yeah, I support KKK members. They're good people. I support white supremacists, whatever that is. They're fine people. You know, at no point did he say that. What he was doing was, for the first time, and I was pleasantly surprised, somewhat shocked, that he even said it.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
yeah.
Like, holy shit, he actually said it, you know, because it's against the rules, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why everybody flipped the fuck out in the media.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, you can't say that there's any blame or responsibility on the left. You can't say that. We're all victims, remember? You know, like, and he went off script, and it was like, holy shit. But good for him, man.
Yeah.
And again, this is, I think, the value of having a Donald Trump as president.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and again, the media and the establishment there is so blinded by their bias against, you know, opposing these evil people, that they do not have the capabilities of, as you say, recognizing that there was another side to this. It was, you know, it takes two to tango, right, as they say. And just to actually add another layer to this as well, to something you mentioned before, the reason, obviously, why many people who were in attendance at the Unite the Right rally showed up in helmets and had with them gear and weapons in some cases, open carry and all this stuff, is because they were able to predict what was going to happen, because under the whole 2016 presidential campaign, these people on the opposition to Trump and to people on the right have come out in the most violent manner, as we talked about, and attacked these people for no other damn reason that they disagree with them politically, right? So people were able to predict that we're probably going to be attacked, we're probably going to end up in fights here, and if the cops stand down, which they did, we have to be able to defend ourselves. So the question is, Justin, just to add an extra layer of intrigue on top of this, if our people that were there didn't show up in some of this year and were prepared, would there have been deaths on our side if they weren't capable of defending themselves or had a helmet on or a shield or something to block these, batons and whatever weapons they use, right?
Well, let me say something that's not going to be very popular. If there were, we'd probably be winning the national argument now. But there weren't, right? You want to help the position? You want to help the right? Go and get killed by an Antifa. That'll help us tremendously.
But isn't that, that's interesting though, but isn't that kind of a position of being a victim, right? And kind of a weakness to a certain extent, right?
Well, no, at that point it would be sacrifice, right? But this is, again, and the bigger point I'm making is that this is the predicament you're in. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Right? So I have a combative seminar that I do called VioPrep. And in the VioPrep seminar, there's a saying that I have, and it's regarding getting into street fights. It's never invite a stranger to a fight. Surprise him with a bad memory, right? So it's a phrase I've been using for years amongst my students. And it has to say, if your mission is to beat somebody in a conflict, introducing, inviting, and giving him sort of notice of the impending conflict is unnecessary because it sabotages your mission. So my point is, if you're going to go to one of these events and there's going to be these people there that you know are going to initiate some sort of conflict, you have to ask yourself, okay, these people are going to show up, they're going to try and physically attack us. What is the best possible way I could leverage that future knowledge that I have to put more power and accomplish more in terms of my mission? So now what do? You have a little, a little petite woman of color get hit in the head by some Antifa with a bat. You orchestrate that. You have somebody go up there and talk to them peacefully, but incite them prior to the camera being turned on to where they're frothing at the bit and they attack this person. But you orchestrate the shot. So what I'm talking about, Henrik, I'm talking about winning. I'm talking about doing things that work. Instead of saying, well, of course, I should be able to defend myself. They're coming with bats. I'm going to be, well, yes, I know that. But now this is the commitment. This is the engagement that you've committed. This is what you've committed to. This is what you've created. You've gotten to the point where you're fighting with Antifa on street corners. And they're not worthy of our time like that.
Yeah, and that I agree with. I just feel that this is just a damn nuisance who's in the way. I don't care about them. I don't give a shit about these people. Like, go and live your fucking life. Go to a communist country and live there and happy with your multiculturalism or something, But it's this idea that their very existence is predicated on the fact that they are trying to make sure that we can't have any interest, we can't organize, we can't live the way we want to live, right? That's what fuels these people. So that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is, of course, again, I go back to that point. What is the objective? What was the goal? What was attempted to be achieved here? Because from my point of view, I see this as an information war to a certain extent, and then on top of it, as a kind of a public relations war, right, of trying to, and I agree with you here, to kind of control the narrative, making sure that they can't twist and turn it against you in this kind of manner, being smart about these kinds of situations, and making sure that we use the tools that we can to not, in the world that we live in, look at these as these aggressors, because they will just use it against us in the way they did, right? And from my point of view, I'm interested in trying to reach out to more people, get the message out, get the word out, make most people who have a mental capability to look at the arguments that we have and say, you know what, these guys, they have a good point, right? But again, if someone showed up there because they just want to beat the heads in of some, as you say, some masked teenagers, then I'm completely not on that page, you know?
Right, and it's just, it comes down to a waste of time. You know, I recall, I'm sure you remember the Project Veritas videos that were made prior to the campaign or prior to the election.
Certainly.
And what you got to see was how they operate. You got to see how they strategize, how they orchestrate, how they make these things happen. And when you talk about who is controlling, like, there's so many people that I know, and, you know, you probably have this too, probably to a lesser extent, because I'm stuck in fucking New York City, you know, where I was born and raised. You know, I have a lot of liberal family members. You know, you have these people that just haven't done enough research to understand the nuances in a lot of these situations. So what they get is they get just that thin layer of information that the media pushes out to them, and the left constantly wins the battle of that shallow follower of the narrative. You know, so the people that are on the fence, that are mostly indifferent, but gonna go with the consensus, the left constantly wins those people over because they do what's necessary to not get caught with their pants down. You know, they don't have these Charlottesville-type events on the left. Why? Because they make sure that the information is always under their control.
And if they ever did, they would have the media on their side, they would have the city council on their side.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, just as an addition also to talk about motives and, you know, reasons for why attending things and what, you know, what are we, not only what are we fighting for, I think that's clear in many regards, and I think you and me line up on many of those points as well, but there are different goals at different times, at different points. It's not always the same thing. I was talking about this idea of, you know, kind of reaching the broad masses to a certain extent and try to open their eyes. And it's not always going to be about that, of course. There is something to say for the boost of morale internally among the quote-unquote troops or whatever, right? There's different, you know, there's different times and different applications for different things. But I do believe that that was a mishmash in this event, too, that there were probably attending because they thought it was going to be a grand old time finally getting to fight with some of these people, while others showed up and they just wanted to, you know, do their speeches and bring awareness to the issue of the attack of heritage. And when it gets too shattered and split up like that, when it's not cohesive, organized, all pulled in the same direction, everyone who's attending know what the score is, know what the objective is, it has to be run more on a military kind of basis, basically, as an operation, right?
Right, absolutely. You cannot allow your message to be muddled. You can't allow somebody else to control your narrative. You cannot produce, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these videos where they take like a movie, like a Disney movie, and they edit it and add music and they cut it like a horror movie trailer, or like they take just regular parts of a regular carefree, fun-loving family film, and they edit it so it looks like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre type movie. This is what happens when you allow people all the information, you allow them to do whatever they want with it before they send it off to the masses. When you use the filter of the mainstream media to get your message out, you're going to lose every single time. You know, I remember the MPI conference. I think it's probably where I first met you and Lana.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, It was a great event. One of the reasons it was a great event is because it was held inside. There weren't Antifa, you know, running through the speakers. It was protected somewhat just because of the design of the talks itself and, you know, the setup of it. But these parks, these rallies that are held out in streets, these situations where you cannot control, just from a logistical standpoint, the ability for your speakers to come off uninterrupted, you know, like this, it's just poorly done, you know, and again, I think it's probably not mentioned enough, with good intention because people don't want too much infighting on the right, but a lot of these people are just doing this shit to get popular. A lot of people I know are just motivated because they want to be famous, because they want to promote their podcast, their merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. I know the real freedom-loving individuals are the ones that are willing to do whatever it takes to win. And that may not be being the super popular, you know, social media celebrity as a result of it, you know, and and I think a lot of that battle goes on, and it's just, you know, you see it, it's just inconsistent a lot of times.
Yep, it's a self, you know, kind of less agenda also on top of it. It's not just about, you know, greasing your own wheels. It's a bigger, you know, bigger agenda at stake. People have to try to kind of see past these issues of what concerns them individually and kind of look at the greater good as well on top of it. You know, what do we, if we can't get to a point where we, you know, cooperate with people who want to try to improve the situation and improve things, where are we going to end up, right? Where are we globally and in the West and all that stuff? We have a hostile elite that are trying to completely destroy our countries, to eradicate us and all these things, right? It displaces us from our own lands and all these issues running. And if we can't see past some of these, you know, selfish issues or things that we're struggling with, I don't think we'll be able to make it, Justin. We have to be able to see at the bigger picture, and to a certain extent, I know that you're an individualist and all these kinds of things too, but it's like if we don't kind of put some of those issues to the side and work together collectively, we won't be able to make it because our enemies are working collectively. We can't just go out and fight individually or just, you know, my shit and my stuff and think we're going to win. I just don't think that's achievable, you know?
I agree completely.
So, just a last point I want to ask you about before we round up. What do you think, is there any legitimate issues behind North Korea? Do you think we're looking at a situation where the media is creating this in the same way that they're creating all these other things? We know it leads to clicks. We know it leads to views and advertising time and everything else. Is there any reason for Americans to worry that, like, a hydrogen bomb is going to go off and the result is going to be an EMP with, like, months, possibly years of power outages throughout somewhere in the United States?
You know, I think that if we're looking at how Trump is handling North Korea, one of the things that I think, and I don't proclaim to be any sort of genius or savant where manipulation is concerned, but one of the things you'll notice, and it's one of the things that he's most chastised for, Donald Trump is a big fan of getting nicknames and giving his opponents nicknames. And it's a nickname that he repeats over and over again, whether it was Low Energy Jeb or Little Marco, or, you know, now it's Little Rocket Man talking about Kim Jong-un. All of these things are meant to remove their perceived power. And he is brilliant at its application, President Trump is. Now, with North Korea, and obviously I'm not privy to confidential classified information in the higher levels of government and military, but from what I understand, if there was a conflict, we stand to do very well in very short order. Now, should there be, and this is to the second point I believe you made, you know, should we be concerned about a hydrogen bomb? Well, hydrogen bomb, I don't think we need to be too concerned about. So I don't think we're going to feel anything if it hits us. You know, so it's like just a matter of, it's like the last episode of The Sopranos. It's just going to fade to black really quickly. But, you know.
Hold that thought. I just want to inject this quickly. The reason why I mention it is because I did read an interesting article today about the issue that, you know, if they got one of these things, and if there was an intention really to hurt a lot of people over a prolonged period of time, they would actually detonate this thing way, way, way up in the air. So it wouldn't actually be the main impact of the blast itself initially that would be the damage. It would be the tremendous amount of damage on the electrical, the power grid in the United States, right? And the electromagnetic pulse from this would basically result in months, possibly years, of the power being out, which would lead to probably millions of people's deaths. But anyway, go on.
Right. So I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before that. Probably yesterday. That's the beginning of the week. House Press Secretary, rather, Sarah, I think it's Sarah Huckabee, was talking to the media, and she was asked about these North Korea comments, and she reiterated the White House's commitment to pursuing all peaceful ends to this conflict. And And, you know, it's good to hear. It's good to hear that they're saying that at a minimum, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's true or not, you know, we really don't know. But that is the narrative that they're putting out there. But what I would have citizens think of is there any reason that you think we should potentially go to war for? Because you will have people that will basically give away their freedom, their autonomy. They'll give away their virtue, their honor, just to avoid conflict. And I think we have to make sure that we don't sort of cross that line of avoiding conflict at all costs. You know, there was a whole generation of Americans, and not just Americans, you know, global citizens that fought in, you know, the world wars. And they went, and a lot of them, you know, whether you agree with the reasons for doing it or not, besides the point, a lot of them went under the mindset that there's, you know, there's a point where, you know, we've had enough and we have to do something. And I think that one of the big things facing America these days is that we've lost touch with where that point is, where that line is, that all of us tell ourselves, you know what, enough is enough. And I think when we just condemn the possibility of war outright, we're basically saying no matter what, we're not going to fight. No matter what, we're not going to assume any risk. No matter what, nothing is worth sacrifice. And I think it's a very dangerous philosophy to have in a very general sense. Obviously not saying that that's what you're saying, but,
yeah.
You know, part of this conversation, I think, is people have to sort of design the parameters by which we're going to deal with it. And we have to understand, you know what? Sometimes there is a reason to go to war. Sometimes there is a reason to assume risk. And sometimes sacrifice is something worthwhile. It's something that we need to honor, you know, and hold to be virtuous. And it's something that, in a general sense, we're lacking and deficient in nowadays in this society. So
definitely.
You know, so I think a lot of the conversation concerning North Korea suffers from those same weak, you know, dysfunctional perspectives and paradigms, you know, the victim status, you know, that you were talking about, the weakness,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right. And just the last point of this, but do you think the guy, Kim Jong-un, is like he's a nutball, he has total power, and he would do something like this just because there have been, like, heated rhetoric or something between the U.S. and North Korea?
I think that, you know, there was a war where we dropped a bunch of bombs on Japan, and I wouldn't say that we were crazy psychos that were desperate, you know, so I think people have reasons for doing shit, and is he crazy, is he not crazy, who knows, I know that motherfucker's got bombs, so if he's got bombs, you know, whether he's crazy or not, you know, it doesn't change the fact
that
we have to prepare for conflict, and there's conflict out there that's worth fighting, and I like our chances.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, well, awesome. Great, Justin. Tell us about the Pressure Project. How can people tune into the show and also give us some of the details about the Warrior Project?
I appreciate it. ThePressureProject.com is the website for the podcast, and I do a weekly podcast on the Master Chimp page that goes into the feed for the Pressure Project. So if you guys go to ThePressureProject.com, you can get that. TheWarriorProject.com is my private membership site, and it's a group that, you know, we do a monthly program. You know, I have things from, you know, being a better father to, you know, martial arts and violence to mindset to everything in between, anything geared towards empowering the modern man to become a better warrior and a better defender and protector and provider for his family. And you can go to thewarriorproject.com for that.
Awesome. Sweet. Thanks, Justin. Always great speaking with you. Thank you for coming on, sharing some of your thoughts on some of the latest developments with us.
I appreciate it. It's always great being on Red Ice.
We're going to be back with more in just a few days. We have more shows and videos coming. Stay tuned. We are working hard on getting the new members website ready for you guys, too. It'll be great when it's ready. It'll be worth it. Trust me. We'll go live with a kind of somewhat scaled down version first, and then we'll bring in new features and kind of do updates as we go. All right. Well, guys, have an awesome day. Thank you so much for listening and staying tuned. We will talk to you soon. Have a good one.